This week's edition of The Profile was first broadcast in 2016.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Hello and welcome along to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley, and today on The Profile I'm speaking to Ken Costa. I'll be introducing him and explaining a little bit about his background in a moment's time. But if you want to hear more interviews or indeed read them, you can find more in Premier Christianity magazine. The Profile is brought to you in association with the magazine, and you can find a free sample copy to request on our website. That's at premierchristianity.com/freesample. Ken Costa joins me today on the programme, and he's had a very successful career in banking. He's engaged in Christian ministry as well. In fact, he's been part of the leadership team at Holy Trinity Brompton in London for some time. He's the author of God at Work, and most recently, Know Your Why. We're going to be talking about that, about finding fulfilment and calling in our daily life. And we're going to be hearing about Ken's background as well.
Sure.
So welcome along to the
Thank
program,
Thank you, Justin.
Ken.
Great to be with you. Great to be with you here.
It's lovely to talk to you. Ken, you've had a very interesting life in all kinds of different ways. Here on The Profile, we like to go right back to the beginning. So,
when I was born.
Absolutely, yeah, right back. Were you raised in a particularly Christian family or not particularly?
Yeah, we were raised in South Africa, which is where I came from. In a sort of Catholic family, and as I grew up out of it, it began to mean less and less. Particularly living in South Africa, which was at the time, you know, just riven by the horrors of the apartheid system, and I really didn't think that God was anywhere to be seen or in the place.
Yes.
And so that had a bad effect on me when I was at university.
I mean, you yourself were somewhat involved in anti-apartheid movement, weren't you?
Well, you know, I led the students' union in my university and the National Union of Students, in which I was an executive member. And in a very small way, because we were a small minority white group of young students passionately concerned for justice. We wanted to hold up the view that, you know, a university was a place where people could come together without regard to race, color, creed, and pursue knowledge. And we were passionate about that. And that, of course, brought us into direct opposition with the ruling authorities.
Indeed. I mean, I was going to say, not necessarily an easy position to take. And you were, alongside people like Steve Biko and others, weren't you?
I knew Steve Biko. He was quite, without any doubt, the most remarkable person of our generation. If the tragedy of his death had not occurred, some of the difficult issues in South Africa that were being faced after Mandela would not have arisen. He would have been in his prime to be leading the country. A remarkable man and a tragedy.
Yes, you know, that his death. His life was cut short in that way.
Absolutely.
I mean, you left South Africa effectively before apartheid finally was abolished.
Yeah.
Did you leave sort of wondering if that would ever be resolved? Did you think it would?
Well, I think for most of us, assumed that it was in the hands of the majority black people, and it would end violently. There were very few who thought that there could be a peaceful transition, and it is a remarkable work. I think a work of the spirit, in which that transition did take place and took place without the normal violence that you would expect.
Did you have the opportunity to meet Nelson Mandela?
I did, yes. I was a trustee of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, and so met him on occasions. A remarkable, transforming man in every way.
He was the right man at the right time, I suppose, in the situation.
Well, he was a man for the whole world. I mean, he wasn't just a man contained to South Africa. He was a global person who helped us sort of transition into this a whole new world of concern for human rights, for respect, for forgiveness.
I mean, decades on from his first premiership, I suppose the question is his vision still happening in South Africa? It's facing all kinds of issues, obviously, as I'm sure you're aware. Do you have confidence that?
Like to think so.
Yes.
I'd like to think so. And I like to think that the churches in South Africa, who are growing and are strong, will be able to be at the forefront of those changes to ensure that the institutions of government are held to account and grow into the prosperity of the future of the country.
I mean, you've described it now as a work of the spirit, the way that apartheid was able to be brought about relatively non-violently. But you weren't a Christian at the time you were in the midst of that movement. What actually brought you to faith in the end?
Well, I left left South Africa and came to study in England. And it was at university that faith, I mean, there were sort of the basics of the faith were there, but they came alive.
Right.
Faith came alive at university, really.
That was Cambridge University.
It was.
Around the same time that Nicky Gumbel.
Yeah, we were there together,
right,
Which was remarkable.
I mean, it feels like that was a time when a number of people who would today become very significant in Christianity in the UK as leaders and so on were finding faith and were finding a very vibrant release.
It was a lively time.
It was.
You know, with the finding something that was new and seeing that faith really could change one's life. So while I was there, I decided I'd, in addition to my studies in law, that I wanted to study theology just to see whether, in fact, this was just a sort of enthusiastic trip or whether it sort of could add up, whether there was any rational base for taking on the Christian faith.
Right.
So it was a very stimulating time.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
I mean, what were you sort of doing at the time? Were you sort of meeting in small groups? You were attending church?
Yes, it had that whole sort of sense of, you know, underground movement.
Yeah.
It was the early days of the what was then the charismatic movement.
The renewal,
The renewal started coming and it wasn't accepted by mainstream. And we say you always felt that you were on the margins.
Right.
But there was a sense of a newness, a freshness, new music, new openness to God, new ways of praying, new sense of praise. So it was very, very exciting time.
Yeah,
of course, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, was there at the
same time.
Nicky Lee, who's done such amazing work in the field of marriage and parenting, he was there as well. So it was good fun.
It has, in a sense, produced a generation of people who are now doing all sorts of amazing things within Christian ministries far and wide. What was going on? Do you just feel that that charismatic renewal was responsible for, I don't know, birthing?
I do think it was a move of the spirit.
Yeah.
I think at the time there was a freshness of looking at the scriptures, just looking at the Bible. I'm so grateful to many people, perhaps of a different tradition, more conservative tradition, you know, who read with the Bible with me every single week.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of cemented into my life the understanding that the authority of Jesus, you know, as it's expressed throughout the whole of the Bible, is a base for the whole of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's talk a little bit about how your life progressed from there in terms of a personal career and your spiritual growth and life. Was banking something that you got into soon after university?
No, not really. I mean, I did. I mean, but it wasn't, I didn't always want to be a banker.
No.
I was looking for a job. You know, it's like finish university, what am I going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember just sort of saying, now I wanted to apply the principles that I'd learned. So I was saying to myself the verse from the Psalms, commit your way unto the Lord, trust in God, and he will act.
Mm.
And a door opened, as often is the case. The doors open, doors close. We believe that you know, those doors that open, no one can close, and those that close, no one can open. So I went into the City of London, into finance, merchant banking, as it was then called. And stayed there for nearly 40 years, where I still am.
And this was in tandem with Nicky Gumbel practicing law, I suppose, post-Cambridge.
Yes.
Finally, him and a number of others of his generation being called into ministry.
Yes.
You saw that happening. Did you ever sort of think, maybe I should be going that route as well?
Well, practically every day, and still do. It seems. I mean, just think about it. All you have to do is work one day a week, and write a sermon. You know,
so. I'm sure you remind Nicky of that regularly, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, not favourably received.
I mean, seeing all that happen, presumably you started sort of attending HTB alongside those guys.
Well, those were, you know, at the time when we came into London, a young curate, which is a young pastor, Sandy Miller, arrived at exactly the same time.
Yes.
And there were two churches that were in massive decline, St. Paul's in Onslow Square and HTB. And, you know, he came in there and we started, you know, forming small groups, you know, Bible study groups, as they were then known. And
what did the rest of the Anglican Church make of these young upstarts sort of bringing in this sort of...
Well, highly suspicious, as you can imagine, you know, sort of... you know, it was seen to be these sort of young insurgents that want to sort of upset the apple cart. Of course, we're all institutionalized now, longing for those insurgent days.
I mean, you were at the same time forging this successful career in banking.
Yes.
Did you find, I mean, something you've now written on, of course, but did you find that there was any pulls on you between the career you were seeking to progress and this fact that you were a Christian and the spiritual life and the values that bred into your life? Were there any points of contradiction or points at which you found it difficult?
Well, never difficult. Always impossible. Because that's what Jesus said. You know, sort of when the disciples throw their hands up and say to him, well, who on earth is going to be saved if a rich man can't get into the kingdom of heaven? And, you know, his answer, well, with you guys, it's impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So, and I think it was that understanding that you just can't do it on your own. There is no way that we are able, we're not wired to be able to live under the stressful conditions of the workplace today on our own. We're never meant to be that. We don't have, and so we don't have the ways of doing it. So we need to build in rhythms of life, the way the Spirit of God leads us each day into, you know, just getting through the days with joy and with purpose.
I mean, in the city, I can imagine it is a bit of a cutthroat environment sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's a cutthroat environment wherever you are in the commercial world. And we all have to make harsh commercial compromises. You know, the world isn't geared to sort of tender sensitivities of most, you know, sort of pastoral Christians.
Yes.
The world is a tough place.
Yeah.
But that's the place we've been called to. We haven't been asked to emigrate out of the world.
Yeah.
No one gave us a visa to leave the world and to go into some happy commune.
Well, I think that's the thing is sometimes, unfortunately, church can act as a bit of a sort of a place where people go on the weekend to sort of recover from the difficulties. Now, that's maybe not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing at all. I mean, it's just a very important point. I do think that is one of the great functions of church. Is it brings together a community that actually can reflect on the week that has passed, you know, because we're downtrodden, stressed, pressured, hard work. That's why ministry in church is so important, is to deal with the issues that ordinary people are finding in every single day of their lives. And then in our worship, in our preaching, to encourage people to, you know, to go out there for the week ahead.
You were married to Fee.
Still am.
Still am.
Very happily.
And did you find that work and family life balance was a tricky one in your kind of line of work?
Well, I didn't really go for the idea of work life balance. Because the assumption is there's work, which is pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And then there's life, which is what you really want to do.
Sure.
But there isn't.
Right.
See, when Paul writes to the Colossians, he talks about in Christ Jesus, all things hang together. So I've always held together this view, the Spirit of God brings the workplace and so-called life together to create one life.
Right.
Now, there are stresses within that life.
Yeah.
But unless you see them as one, you're just going to screw yourself up and live in that sort of schizoid world.
Yeah.
Miserable in both.
Yeah. How did you aim to try and bring, as it were, your Christian life into the work life?
Well, the first is to understand, and I had a little mantra, which I keep repeating, that my workstation is my worship station.
Okay.
That's where God has called me to be. That's where God calls, you know, everybody who's working and listening to us now.
Yeah.
God calls you there. That's your place of worship.
Yeah.
It is not only on a Sunday. I mean, it'd be a strange God, a very uneconomical God. I think God's the great economist. That would actually say, do you know what? I'm going to create all these people and they're going to be great for Sunday and for worship, you know, for an hour in a church or three if you're a Pentecostal on a Sunday, and that's it.
Yes.
And he created us all through the week.
Absolutely.
That was the first. The second, so you've got to get a framework. Mm. The second was, well, I read the Bible and the Financial Times almost every day of my life.
Yeah.
So that you could see what, you know, what's happening in the world and what the word is saying about it.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to tell you which came first, did we read the Bible first or the Financial Times.
Did you have any sort of groups within the offices you were working in where Christians could meet and have some fellowship of some kind?
We did, and there was an alpha group running running in the bank, and that's...
Did people think it at all odd that you had this firm Christian faith?
Yeah, pretty odd, actually. I mean, you know, some play golf and some sort of do other things. And you
they
know,
saw Ken, that as your eccentric hobby, basically.
Yeah, yeah, sort of Ken does God. You know.
Did it ever influence people that you were working with, would you say?
Well, I like to think so, and I like to think so in a way that is not a preachy way. I very remember we were in the middle of a very, very difficult set of transactions, and I was working with a very stressed colleague, and I looked at him and I said, "Hey, Pete, let's go for a walk."
Mm.
And all we did was walk over London Bridge and back at lunchtime.
Mm.
And to this day, he hasn't forgotten it.
That's really interesting, isn't it? I guess it in that kind of an environment, which can be highly pressured and highly stressful, and unfortunately, we know that the reality is people take their lives sometimes in the financial industry because of the pressures and the things they're feeling. What would you say to the person who sort of almost has got things out of perspective, I suppose, and has sort of somehow managed to make their work life everything, you know, everything that is important to them? How do we stop that happening?
Well, it's difficult because by then you're far gone. Mm. So the first bit of advice, don't get there.
Yeah.
Build into yourself safeguards, people that you can talk to, people that you can be accountable to before you actually get there. But if you are there in that place, just stop for a moment and turn to someone you trust and pray for the Spirit of God to fill you afresh.
Mm.
Because without the work of the Spirit in your life, there is no way that we can cope with the stress of the workplace.
Yeah.
We need to find new rhythms of life, new ways of being able to cope with the pressures of the day-to-day life.
You've already mentioned that phrase from the Gospels. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. As someone who has seen, you know, overseen massive financial transactions, has seen the kind of lifestyle, I'm sure, that accompanies many people who live in that world of business and commerce. How do you put that verse together with this world that you have inhabited for so long, Ken? Because...
Well, because there is one world and there is one group of people and we all suffer the same. Do you know, I have been with the greediest of billionaires on their private jets.
Right.
And I have been with the most extraordinarily generous billionaires, and I've seen the difference. But then I've been with the greediest young theology students with hardly a bean, and the most generous young students. You know,
so greed and generosity are not a factor
of
wealth.
They're the attitude of the heart.
Right.
You know, you can be greedy and have nothing, and you're greedy and have a lot.
So it's not wrong in that sense to be wealthy, to be rich. It's about the attitude of the heart you carry with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's the desire of the heart.
Mm.
You know, what is the real desire of the heart? Do you know that in that brilliant story of the rich young ruler, do you know those little words, sometimes often forgotten, he ran towards Jesus.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
He wanted to know, something is missing in my life.
I've got everything, but
there's something missing.
Yes.
And that, of course, is the moment you see that, the perspective changes.
Now, Jesus' response to him, of course, is, you've kept the law, so well done. Now, you just need to do one more thing. Go and sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and follow me.
Mm.
And he went away sad.
Yeah.
Brokenhearted, even, is the way sometimes it's put. I suppose, is that what God is actually calling everyone who is rich to do? Or is it simply that he's addressing the thing that is the major blockage in someone's life.
Well, it can't be what he was calling everyone to do, otherwise the parable of the talents would be a nonsense.
Okay.
So, I mean, but what he's saying is get the priorities right.
Right.
You know, what really matters is to sort your life out so that, you know, I come first in it.
Yes.
And then let the rest follow it.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was out of proportion in the rich young ruler's mind.
Yeah.
Totally out of proportion. He got the whole thing wrong.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, he had to make some radical surgery.
Mm.
And for, in his case, he needed to make the change. And, you know, he weighed it up and said, no deal.
Who knows? Maybe I always like to think maybe he did come round in the end.
Well, the whole of the Bible is filled with maybes. Thomas, you know, became the great believer, which I think he probably did.
Yes, but okay. HDB has in a sense been at the centre of the Alpha course.
You've seen
the amazing growth of that course in your lifetime. You're the chair of Alpha still.
Yeah, I was bullied into it by Nikki, but I'm still there.
Again, I just wonder what is the secret to both to HGB's success and Alpha's success? Because out of this, you know, one church almost, you've seen this extraordinary effect on evangelism, on church planting in the UK. We have an Archbishop of Canterbury who came from that, you know. And God just seems to be blessing the things that HGB has done. Now, what do you put that down to?
Well, one day I want to ask him that question. You know, when we get there, that's the question I really want to ask. Many people say, well, of course, you know, if you're a big London church, you've got good resources, you've got good people coming there, you've got great marketing, it'll all work. Yeah. I know lots of Christian organisations, you know, who've got great marketing, great resources, who are going nowhere.
Yeah.
So, to be honest, it is a work of the Spirit. It is a work of the Spirit that in this time we have managed to hit a chord, to strike a chord in a hungry nation and worldwide, where Alpha can penetrate. And it is so extraordinary that Alpha reaches rich and poor, those in prisons, outside, different cultures, different natures, different nations, different denominations. It's an extraordinary thing to see the growth of Alpha in Catholic as well as Pentecostal circles.
Have you personally sat in on Alpha courses and helped to lead small groups?
Yeah.
What sort of stories have you seen in those kind of settings?
Well, the most memorable was a guy who walked out.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and said, look, I've had enough. I'm going home.
Was this early on in the course?
Early on, yeah. He sort of said, look, this is freakish. I'm off. And we said, Well, great, and see you next week. Hey, what about having a drink?
Right.
And he was so struck on his way home that we didn't try and say, well, now look, stay. You'll get over it. Right. Everybody has a bit of a wobble.
Yeah.
You know, but left the freedom.
Yeah.
To choose, that he came back and was wonderfully converted. And I think it's one of the essence of Alpha is so much that it is unthreatening.
Right. Yes.
You know, it is meant for a generation.
Mm, absolutely. I suppose it captures what I think is increasingly the case, that it's not just about being taught something. It's about forming relationships. And that, for me, has always been a key in any Alpha course.
Well, you're so right. You see, this generation, more than any before, I think, belonging comes before believing.
Mm. Absolutely.
And what Alpha has done is it's created a sense of belonging. You know, it's amazing how those groups stick together.
Yes.
They go away on the weekend, the weekend on the Holy Spirit, filled with the Spirit of God. It bonds, it draws people together. And that sense of belonging then leads to believing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure in the decades you've been at Holy Trinity Brompton, you've seen many people go from, I guess, quite self-centered lives to lives that have been turned around in that way. I mean, that's I suppose the parable of the rich young ruler coming home for people when they realize what they can do. I mean, would you say that the church in that way has had an immediate effect on its local area, as well as obviously the effect it's had internationally?
Well, the local area is complicated. You know, we are a metropolitan church in the middle of London.
You draw from quite a
large... So we draw in everything in London. Yeah, you know, you come from wherever you are. Yeah, you travel into the theatre, you travel into the clubs, you travel into the churches. Yeah, so everybody travels.
Yeah.
So on the immediate sort of surround, well, you know, that's... mind you, we used to be chaplains to some of the stores around the place.
Right.
Well, but it's more difficult in London.
Of course it is. I suppose, really, I'm thinking of the way that it has impacted the UK now, especially through
planting.
The planting of churches and things like that.
Yes.
Again, there's almost a sense I get that the HTB has found the more it's been generous itself, the greater the blessing is, because there are many churches, I'm sure, which would be nervous about giving away its best resources in terms of people and money and things like that. But HTB has very self-consciously almost done that in a very sort of...
We have,
Almost extravagant way in sending its people to other parts
It's pretty painful. When you give, you send people away, it's not just the financial costs.
Mm.
It's actually sort of key leaders
that
move. But God's been very faithful over the years and has, you know, allowed growth to come back. You have a dip, obviously.
Yeah.
But you continue to grow. But now the amazing thing is it's not just HTB planting.
No.
So the plant in Brighton, for example, is already planted in three other churches.
It's this sort of exponential growth that begins to occur at that point.
It's both exponential and it is away from the centre.
Yes.
So it grows in the perimeter.
It's rather like a plant sprouting and then those sprouts sprout further.
Exactly that. It's organic. Yeah. And, you know, we're hoping that will continue.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we can build these resource-based churches in and around the country.
Well, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to talk a little more depth about your latest book, which is doing very well, and is called Know Your Why. And your first book, God at Work, was specifically about the workplace. This, I think, takes the picture a bit wider than that.
It does,
and talks about ministry, calling, and that kind of thing. So we'll talk about that in the next section of today's show. You're listening to The Profile with me, Justin Brierley, interviewing Ken Koster today. He's had a successful career in banking. He's the chair of Alpha. He's part of the leadership team at Holy Trinity Brompton, and he's the author of a number of books, including the latest one, which is called Know Your Why. We'll be talking about that in a moment's time. Don't forget that you can find more interviews with people in all walks of life from Premier Christianity magazine. Do go to the website and ask for a free sample copy. PremierChristianity.com/freesample.
This month, Premier Christianity magazine asks, what really matters to you? Read about one of the biggest issues of today as we address Black Lives Matter head on. Understand the church's response to racism, how we get it wrong, where we get it right, and why there's no excuse for apathy. Immerse yourself in powerful Black Lives Matter features, plus stories of lockdown, interviews, and current affairs. Available in print and online at premierchristianity.com.
This week's edition of The Profile was first broadcast in 2016.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the programme. I'm Justin Brierley. I'm the editor of Premier Christianity magazine, the monthly resource that helps you to put your faith into action and connect it with contemporary culture. And The Profile is not only a radio programme and a video show, but also, of course, a regular feature in Premier Christianity magazine. So if you'd like to get a free sample copy of the latest edition of the magazine, find out what you've been missing, go to premierchristianity.com/freesample. Really pleased to have on the programme with me today Ken Koster, who has been working in banking for a lot of his life, but has also been helping others to, as it were, explore their work-life balance. He's already said he doesn't believe there is such a thing, really. There's just one life, and we have to make sure it's all centred around Christ. But really, that's been the subject of books he's written, including God at Work, and his latest book, which is called Know Your Why, literally just been released. And I'm looking forward to it having an impact, hopefully, Ken, on many people.
Hope so, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people do go into work, maybe they've left university or college or whatever, and start to do something which they're going to do for the rest of their life, pretty much. Perhaps, you know, if they're lucky, they might get to retire. That's increasingly rare in today's society, I think. But many people don't go into it with any kind of sense, I think, of, well, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? How is this going to pan out? It's just something that's almost assumed, I think, in our culture. You work, you make your money, and hopefully you earn enough to have a nice time on the weekends with your family, sort of thing. Do you think we need to put more into actually thinking about what we're doing in our the place we spend most of our time, most of the year?
Well, I think we do. And I think the key part of it is to know your why. And we need to ask that question. If you haven't asked it, you're going to ask it. Mm. Why am I here? What am I doing? And you need to look at why we do the things that we do. Mm. So people go to work for cash.
Yeah.
You know, I want to earn some bread, get the money, and that's what really motivates me. Mm. Some go for career.
Yeah.
That, you know, I want to get to the top. I'm not really so much interested in money. You know, I want to be the senior consultant in a hospital. You know, some would do it for a cause. Right. Many of the voluntary organizations say, I want to, you know, I believe in this cause. Yes. I want to be there.
Yeah.
And some, as you mentioned, you only work to recreate, you know, so that I want the money because I would love surfing and I need to buy a new surfboard and I want to go out and do that. But in all those cases, in my view, you will burn out.
Right.
Because there isn't the energy to sustain you through it.
Mm.
And there will be consequences to your own personal life. Mm. And calling is critical to, yes, you know, to cash, career, cause, and recreate.
Yes.
In any of those things. The calling, the sense that there is, not by some random accident do I happen to be where I am, but actually that God is really interested in what I'm doing.
Yes.
And wants me to succeed and prosper. Obviously with, you know, the suffering that goes with it.
Yes.
There's no straight line of just sort of, you know, I've got it made, it's going to be great. Mm. We go through the hard times.
Absolutely.
But at least we know we're in the flow of the work of the Spirit.
Yes. As we've said before, I think a lot of Christians, unfortunately, still dissect their life into my quote-unquote spiritual life, and that's church, and when I go to the prayer group, and maybe when I have my quiet time, and the secular bit of their life, which is when they go to work. And for you, actually, the whole of your life is a calling.
Well, in Paul writes to the Colossians and says, in Christ Jesus, all things hold together.
Yes.
And, of course, we live schizoid Christian lives. If you live like that, you're going to screw it up.
Yeah.
There's no way you can do it. We cannot survive the pressure of the modern world by trying to develop different compartments.
Yeah.
Because the moment you do that for those compartments, I assure you, you'll have separate other compartments where you'll do perhaps not so good things.
Yeah, the compartmentalization is a problem. So, in a way, this is at the center of your book, this idea of calling and purpose in that sense. I suppose many people, though, who aren't Christians especially, perhaps have no concept of that idea.
Ah, but you see, they have no concept of calling, in which case I'd say, honestly, come to know the good news of Jesus Christ, and you'll see what that means. But they all know that there are times in your life when you know, or when you're working, that you know you're in a zone.
Yes.
You know you're in a flow.
Yes.
You sense that you're energized by what you are doing.
Mm.
And those are great times.
Yeah.
Now, they don't necessarily last all of your life, but there are times when you know that that is right. And those are confirmatory signs that you're in the right place.
Yes.
And that's whether you're Christian or not Christian. Mm. I mean, I'm just saying calling it calling for a particular reason, which is this. Every single Christian, when you know...
Yeah.
When you understand that you are loved by God, that you are known by Him, He knows exactly who you are, and you are called.
Yes.
When you've got those three things together, it forms the foundation of what you could do with the rest of your life.
Have you in your life ever had points where you felt that that what I'm doing now doesn't feel right. I've not got that sense that this is flowing.
Sure, usually on a Monday morning. I mean, we're human beings. You know, we're not machines that can sort of program it, you know. So yes, we do ask questions of, you know, is this what I should be doing?
Yeah.
And there are those times when we need to step back and reflect and try and understand what it is that we really feel we're called to. Do you know, the interesting thing is that, and I open the book with this way, is that the first question, indeed the first words of Jesus in John's gospel are, what do you want?
Yes.
What do you want?
Yes.
I mean, it is extraordinary that he should address the whole issue of identity. Mm. The why question came right up in the front. Why do you? And of course, they say, well, you know, let's go and talk. And they meet together, and Jesus talks to them, and then they're called.
Mm. So you've delineated these different things that people often work for.
Yeah.
Calls for money, for recreation, for success, whatever. In a sense, how does calling relate to all of those different reasons people might be working for money? Are those bad reasons to work for to be working,
no.
Or is one better than another?
No, they're different, and most of us will probably do all of them.
Yes,
but the point about it is that when you know that these they form part of an overall pattern. Mm. There is a linkage between them so that the cash desire doesn't sort of totally screw up your life and your relationships, your marriage, because you're driven towards it.
Mm.
And the burnout that inevitably comes if you're completely single-minded about something that is only where you're the only one that matters and there's no concern for others around you, then, you know, you can avoid that.
How do you go about then discerning the call on your life, would you say?
Well, the first is you have to believe, you know, that God who is there is a general call to all Christians in every age, every generation, every culture, every background, every language throughout the centuries has been the same. The principal call that Jesus gave us is to go, make disciples, and see people filled with the Spirit of God. I mean, it's always the same. Love your neighbor as yourself, never changing.
Yeah.
So when people say, well, I don't know what I'm really meant, my calling is, well, you do know your first bit.
Mm.
Just stick to that
and
work at it. But there is a specific sense in which, you know, God, he creates maximum freedom for us to be able to choose. It's not just one single line, and if you fall off it, you've missed God's purposes.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's constantly iterative, interactive.
Mm. I mean, many people only ever associate the phrase calling with Christian ministry.
Yeah, sure, because, I mean, how many people do you know, because Christian ministers, when they describe it, they say, you know, what's your calling? Well, it's the thing you're passionate about, the thing I'm going to give your life for, and gives, you know, every sacrifice.
Yeah.
But if you're an accountant, you'll do
it
a lot of things.
It doesn't quite feel as adventurous or brave.
I mean, I don't know how passionate you know, how are you going to give your life for the accountancy profession?
Yeah.
But you're still called.
Yeah.
So we've got to be careful. But the caring professions, you know, medicine, teaching.
And there's this danger, isn't there, that in churches, you know, on the Sunday when we sort of commission the missionary going
off,
the person doing the evangelism, as though those are the only things we really think are worth doing.
Yes.
And we forget to commission our teachers and doctors and administrators and all the other types of things that people do with their 9-to-5 life.
Sure.
But then how do you help the person who says, look, I work on a cash register in Tesco's and I don't feel particularly significant and I don't feel like my life is really making that much difference to people. I'm nice, I try to do a good job. But in what sense is God using me, calling me into this particular sphere of life?
Look, you know, for many people, life is hard and the jobs are not interesting.
Mm.
But the calling isn't only the job that you're doing.
Okay.
The calling is to do that which you're doing, but the attitude with which you do it, the people that you're meeting, the conversation that you're having, that what you do with your life afterwards. You can either become a victim and say, well, there it is, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Or you could actually turn it around and become victorious in what you're doing just by the simple changes of attitude. Just seeing, you know, the person at the cash register in Sainsbury's actually sort of smiling, you know, seeing somebody coming by, feeling that, you know, I'm playing a part in the whole.
Yes. I think that's almost only possible for me, at least. I often think if you do have this sense that there is a God who is there and who is interested in your life and what you're doing, because I think for many people who don't have that sense, they will see this is just my lot. This is the way the cards fell in my life.
Yeah.
And I tried to make the best of it, but it might not go very well.
Yeah.
But for a Christian, you're saying actually, however menial or insignificant you may think you're...
And I mean, the way I describe it is this. Look, and even if you've got an interesting job, it's not going to be interesting every second of every day.
No.
What you need to work out is this. You've got to get the core right. Mm. If you get the core right, good relationships with God, you know, good times of praying, good times of being with your colleagues and interacting well, and knowing that the sense of you know, there is a purpose to what I'm doing. If you get the core right, then the chores follow easily.
Okay.
But if the core is wrong, the chores will always be chores, and they will expand to eat up the core.
Yeah.
And you'll feel frustrated and depressed and disillusioned by what you're doing.
I mean, sometimes, as you say, we bound out of bed in the morning, we feel energized, we feel like there's things we want to do with our day and make happen. Other times, you know, it's a real struggle to you know, get to work. And maybe it is the pressures and stresses that often
But there are seasons of life. I mean, life doesn't always run in predictable ways.
No.
You see, one of the reasons why I know your why is, I think, an important question to ask, which is why I address it in the book, is that for an entire generation, unlike a previous generation, which have had one, maybe two sort of jobs, as it were, there are real seasons.
Mm.
The work, the job market, the workplace is changing dramatically. People working from home, people, you know, changing, smart working, is going to change even more than we can ever imagine.
Mm.
So there are going to be times when you're doing what you're doing, but you know you're not going to do it forever.
Mm.
So it is important to know that in the moment in which I am doing whatever I'm doing that now, God is with me.
Yes.
But there are times when you begin to prepare for that next stage.
Yes.
For the next phase of one's life.
Yeah.
And the next season of life.
Yeah.
And it's managing that change at the so that you're not constantly unsettled.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't really like what I'm doing.
Yes.
And I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that
you're permanently unsettled.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's the big judgment. That's the discernment that's needed.
And I think a lot of people go through life a lot of the time saying, well, when I've got the job I like, I've got the family situation I want, when this particular set of circumstances has worked out, then I'll know that I'm on the right course.
When is never.
Right. So you say, in a sense, you may never get to that point.
When
and
is never.
And so the calling isn't some point of the future which you'll eventually get to when all the circumstances line up. It's actually something that starts now, presumably.
Yeah.
And how do you change that mindset, though? Because a lot of people do think it's got to be once, you know, I get the right thing and I'm in the right place and
so on. It's just never going to happen. When is never. Mm. It's just, you know, when I've got the money, when I've got... Mm. You've got to, you know, it's what you've got in your hand now to be able to say, this is what God has given me for this season in my life.
Mm.
And I sense that there is a calling on my life to actually do what I'm doing. However, it might be, you may long to be doing something different, but it isn't possible now.
Yes.
Because you've got a mortgage to pay, or family to look after, whatever the circumstances are. That doesn't mean to say you give up your dreams. The dreams continue. We need to dream and to look forward and, you know, with encouragement that, you know, there are times when the things move together. There's a different stage and phase of life. But to enjoy where I am at the moment is a gift of the Spirit of God.
Yes. And I suppose too many people sort of don't enjoy the journey they're on because they're so obsessed with the goal that they think they're sort of working towards. And I think a lot of people end up not living, as you know, it's a bit of a catchphrase, but in the now, you know, so that they, because they're constantly obsessed, I suppose, with that next achievement that
if you're released from it to know that the enjoyment that comes from God, because you're living an integrated life, you know the work of the Spirit of God in your life, you know that that's empowering where you are, you can be in a much more settled place, and be able to know that he is in control of life. Mm. It is a question of faith.
Yeah.
Now, if faith were knowledge, it wouldn't be faith.
Mm. Mm.
And what we want from calling is a God who is a search engine.
Yes.
God isn't Google. you can't just type it in and say, you know, am I going to be, am I a newspaper writer for the rest of my life?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, God, it doesn't work like that because he's building a relationship. And if you miss the relational element, then the rest just doesn't fit in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose that there's that sense in the Gospels as well, and we sometimes miss this, that the disciples, as well as being the disciples of Jesus, were fishermen, and they carried on fishing, actually, quite a lot of the time.
Well, it's a really interesting thing you raise. I've been thinking about it quite recently. So if you were assuming that Jesus was going to come on earth to establish a completely a new religious movement, you would have expected him to be coming to the Sadducees or the Pharisees or the high priests or one of the leaders of the religious
somewhere
movement.
Of influence.
Somewhere of influence.
Yes.
Not one single one of the disciples happened to be a rabbi.
Yes.
Not one.
Mm.
Every single one of them were people called from the day-to-day, tax collectors, fishermen, you know, sort of normal, you know, what we would probably call, you know, working people.
Yeah.
Well, why did he do that?
Mm. Mm.
And the answer is he did that because he wanted to show to us that actually what he came on earth to establish, as we read in the letter to the Ephesians, is a new humanity.
Yes.
Not some new sort of religious sect.
Not some sort of special commune where you can be free from the normality.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, people do sometimes think Christianity is lived like that. Before we have to finish today, we've been through a lot of turmoil in the UK in the last month or two. We've seen the Brexit debate happen, and that's sort of, I think for many people, it's caused a lot of uncertainty, certainly in the, I'm sure you're aware, economic markets, that's been the case and so on. I guess I'd be interested in your view, both from a financial perspective, but also spiritually speaking, in terms of where this country is at the moment. Do you see opportunities emerging from this sort of, I suppose, unsettled time in our country? Lots of political change, lots of uncertainty about what might happen in the future. What do you think might be going on in that sense?
Well, the important thing to remember is that Brexit's come and go, but, you know, Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. New life, a new humanity has been created. That is what really matters.
Yeah.
So I think when one looks at the debate on the referendum on Brexit, one of the problems that we have is people say, it divided the nation. Mm. The referendum divided. Mm. It didn't. What it did was it actually showed the fault lines that already existed.
Right. Yes.
North, south, young, old, religious communities, Christians, non-Christians, or whatever you want to do it. And that, of course, has created, as it were, enlarged or shown a picture of a damaged family.
Right.
And that is what, of course, is the exciting opportunity that exists for us to say into this unsettled, when people are asking questions. Mm. And what are they asking? They're asking identity questions.
Yes.
See, know your why, as I point out into the book, is not just for an ordinary citizen. It is for a community, for a church, for a city, for a country, to understand its identity.
Yes.
So I think it's a huge opportunity for us to say, okay, we are being shaken up. It happens to be constitutional.
Mm.
But what about the Christian heritage?
Yeah.
I'm far more worried by the fact that for the first time in well over 1,000 years, those who confess the name of Jesus are less than half of the population.
Yes.
And that those who have religion as they describe as none are more than half.
Yes.
Now, that's a task for us because so many people are missing the very good news of Jesus Christ and the love of God in our lives, in the nation.
Do you think sometimes these sort of shakings have to occur in order, I suppose, I sometimes think, to make people realise the foundations they may have built their life on are not necessarily that secure, that God can use, if you like, uncertainty and instability in that way.
Well, it's true. You know, you build your house on sand.
Yes.
You know, if we build an economy over the last years, you know, on the basis of governments printing more money.
Yeah.
And it's sand. You know, a day of reckoning will come.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
But that is in financial terms.
Yes.
And the real question is, how do we as people flourish and live in times of unsettling? And that's where the Christian comes into his own or her own.
I mean, what you often get from the government is obviously financial well-being in the country is the marker of how we're doing. I mean, have we gone too far down that route? Because to some extent, I often think, well, we're financially more prosperous than we were, say, you know, several decades ago. But I'm not sure we're any happier than we were several decades ago. I mean, what needs to happen in the country beyond simply making sure we're financially stable and on a good footing and the economy's growing and so on?
Well, you'd expect me to say, you've got to know your why.
Yeah.
You know, when we as individuals, when the churches as communities, and when the country, you know, gets to know its why. And you know, again, it's not a Google event. You can't just press a button to know it. When we see the overall picture, know why we've been called to live every day with purpose, is a huge positive benefit.
Yeah.
And I think that's that searching that is going on at the moment will produce great fruit, because it is true that well-being is a measure and should be a measure of a nation's strength, not just the GDP measurement.
Right. I suppose the question is how do we encourage people to see that the thing they're missing is Jesus, is that calling on their life. I mean, we live in a culture where there are all kinds of things we can now fill our life with. You know, social media, Facebook can you know, have people while away hours and hours on those mediums, or it might be the golf club or any other measure of forms of entertainment. So in a sense, we've got more choice than we've ever had before. How do we as a church, though, help people to see beyond all of those things that you could be filling your life with in order to sort of avoid asking the question,
what we've got to do is we've got to invest as a church in human relationships outside of the status quo. You know, a whole generation just doesn't want the same sort of patterns. They're bored with the same patterns of behavior. They're cynical about the ways in which government are acting, and the institutions have let the people down. So the same old just doesn't apply.
Yeah.
So what we've got to do is we've got to create this alternative and invest what I call outside the status quo, outside the current setup.
Yeah.
And say, hey, look, there is another way of living.
Mm.
And this way is more exciting, it's more fulfilling.
Yeah.
You can find and fulfill your calling in life if you know your why. Now, let me help you find, you know, how do you know your why?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been great chatting to you, Ken, about things, and I hope that the book really does help people.
I mean, particularly if you know your why, then that's great. If you don't, well, maybe the book will be a help.
Mm.
But it particularly, you know your why, and then help others to find theirs. That's a real success formula.
When would you say you actually discovered your why?
This morning. It's a continuing it's a continuing relationship that we have.
Yes.
You don't just get given the blueprint.
Mm.
Faith is not knowledge. If faith were knowledge, we wouldn't be living it.
Sure.
So you wake up in the morning every day and you say, you know, am I doing today what you've called me to do?
Well, Know Your Why is available now. And if you want to find out more about the book, you can simply go to Amazon. You can order it there. Why not check out Ken's website as well, godatwork.com. You can find out more about Ken there. And of course, HTB is prevalent on the internet. You can find out as much as you like by searching. But it's been lovely to have you
join
me.
It's great to be with you and to those who are listening. Hope it's been a help.
It's been very helpful. Thank you. And if you want to find out more about the profile, do go online to premierchristianradio.com/theprofile. And if you'd like more on Christianity Magazine, the magazine I edit, then do go to premierchristianity.com/freesample if you'd like to get a free sample copy of the mag. Do stick here on Premier Christian Radio. Dave Rose coming up next with Premier Playback, some of the best bits from the past week.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.